Yeah, it's time to get personal now. We've been able to talk about a bunch of stuff, but it's all had a nice safe distance. Mostly, of course, about porn, sex, and technology, and the role that the three all play together. One of the things that has been mentioned now many times is the whole idea that pornography manages to help establish various technologies or medium. The classic now that we've been mentioning for a couple of times is the whole VHS cassette thing, which, of course, a lot of people now are saying is a urban myth. Be that as it may, it's reached the point that people automatically associate this issue with porn and its power to establish a technological standard. But what we tend to forget when we're talking about this particular power or the standards that are set is that every time a new technology is established, it means a personal process of development. Every single person who uses this technology is suddenly forced to learn something new. Sometimes it's easier. Now, a VHS cassette is not such a complicated thing. At least you wouldn't think it was. Get the VCR, put the tape in, push play. Oddly enough, it was a bit more difficult at the time. And this is where it starts getting personal. I'm going to talk to you now about this personal process of development. And the only way I can do it is by telling stories. My stories right now. I was originally going to have some other people tell me stories, but the funny thing about porn is that a lot of people still don't want to talk about it. I had some people that originally agreed to speak. Of course, in trying to find these people, I realized I was outing myself as a porn consumer to a lot of people who probably didn't want to know that. But a few people said, okay, that sounds cool, I'll talk about it. And I waited, and I waited, and I thought, well, you know, okay, now it's time. Can we start, can we record a video interview so I can show it to all the people in the States? And all of a sudden, they were a little less interested. And they were a little bit more scared because it, I guess, you know, it's one thing to think about it. It's one thing to maybe talk to me about it in a coffee shop. And it's another thing then to realize that you're going to be up on screen and viewable to a bunch of people here and even more people, hopefully, back in Austria who may see it and may realize that, oh, hey, I know them. They watch porn? So, I'm left with my stories. And maybe I can make up a couple of stories based on some technological developments that took place a long, long time ago, but which other people also claim were due to porn. So let's start with me. Porn has taught me a lot in my life. Not just about sex. One of the first things, I found my first porn magazine when I was 6, playing hide and seek. I didn't realize I was playing hide and seek with my dad at the time as well. He wasn't in the house, but his magazines were, and they were where I was hiding. I didn't mention anything at the time, but a couple of days later, of course, when I wasn't playing with any friends, I played hide and seek again and found the magazines and started looking through them. And my world changed. Obviously, it was the first time I'd seen a naked woman. Growing up in the Midwest, you don't really see your mother walking around naked in the house very often. So that was sort of a mind-blowing experience, but that wasn't the most important thing. The most important thing was that I got caught. And that's when I told my first lie that I remember consciously. And I guess lying is a technology of sorts. It's a tool. It's a tool that a lot of people use. The lie that I told was I explained that I was doing homework. There was actually looking for pictures of pilots because it was one of the Playboy stewardess issues, if I recall. So I was looking for pictures of pilots to cut out and paste, you know, in a collage or something like that. The problem is, of course, that the only pictures I found were pilots with their pants down and well, not really pilots with their pants down, pilots and then scantily clad stewardesses. So my mom didn't really buy that one. And this started a war of escalation, which, of course, meant that I had to work harder to find the porn. Now, when it gets down to learning, motivation is an important factor. You don't learn something if you're not really interested, if you don't have a reason, if there's not something that's either forcing you to learn or something inside of you which compels you to learn. Now, in the case of school and multiplication tables, there was someone outside forcing me to learn it, and I didn't do very well. When it comes to learning things because I want to find my porn, it's a lot easier. I'm afraid of heights. One of the first places that my parents chose to hide stuff was up high. I learned to climb. I learned to stack stuff. I learned to lose my fear of at least immediate heights. That worked for a little while because my parents never would have thought that I would have actually been the type to like climb up shakily stacked things and dig around in places that I just shouldn't have even known existed. So I won that round. Until eventually then they figured out, well, that's not going to work, so they locked it away. So I learned how to pick locks. That was useful. Unfortunately, I only learned to pick the locks that my dad used. I wasn't able to use it for any of the other stuff because most of the other things that were locked away just weren't quite as interesting. Now, that process eventually changed. It reached a point where I was hiding my porn stash from my parents. I had the upper hand on that one, but the criminals usually do. It's always everybody who's falling that's trying to catch up. And one of the most important things that my desire to find porn taught me was just how useful computers can be. My dad, of course, eventually had to go out, and he was a bit of a gadget freak, not entirely. He didn't know what to do with them. He just knew that he wanted to have them. He didn't always use them. The VCR, for example. We got a VCR fairly early, and I couldn't really figure out exactly what he wanted to do with it. We never recorded anything. We never bought any videos. And right about the same time, all the magazines disappeared. I had to show him a couple of times how to program the thing, but I didn't know why, because I didn't think, at least, that there was anything worth recording. He didn't watch anything that I knew of. Turns out that there was a pay-per-view thing that was also starting up at the same time, which I found out later he had subscribed to, which is why he needed to learn how to record with a video recorder. Now, this is a man who, it took me 3 or 4 times to finally get that into his head, but then it worked, and then all of a sudden, there was nothing left. Until I stumbled on Debbie Does Dallas. He had that hidden away underneath one of the drawers, I think, in his, what do they call those things? Cupboard. That was an interesting experience. And in the process of doing this, he got really into newer forms of technology. About the same time, maybe a year or two later, the Apple II came out. And he decided he had to get an Apple II. He was going to get it for me, because it's good for learning. He was so damn right, and he didn't know just how right he was. So we got it, and of course, you know, I played Zork and stuff like that, and did some programming just for the heck of it to help maintain my comic book collection, and you know, but it wasn't that exciting until a friend of mine came to school one day with a Novation AppleCat modem. Does that say anything to anybody here? Good, I'm not the oldest one. The Novation AppleCat modem was about 300 baht, I think, at the time. But it was a brilliant little piece of hardware that you could plug into your Apple II and not only start accessing bulletin boards. I think CompuServe was actually, CompuServe and America Online were the only two other possibilities. Didn't belong to either of those. Source, yeah. But I was only interested in the bulletin boards. But the thing is, the AppleCat wasn't just a modem. It had a bunch of other funny things built into it. Things that you could use to really explore the phone network. At first, I didn't understand what that could be for. I had no clue. But through being on the bulletin boards, I started realizing there wasn't just my little places like Pirate's Bay and what else was going on, where we were talking about various interesting things like anarchism and how to build various things that you probably shouldn't build because your parents will be pissed off and the house will smell bad. There was, well, if you were silly enough to actually do that particular one, yeah. But there are also people who are mentioning things like that there were adult bulletin boards and that there were a whole lot of other things out there that you could access that weren't bulletin boards, but you had to find them because they weren't listed anywhere. Fortunately, using the AppleCat, you could fully automate the process of finding anything that would answer your modem. So I started doing that. This led me to discover the first adult BBS. But then I had to find a way to get in. Fortunately, that's easy enough to program. Nothing like a little bit of brute force, and your mother doesn't know what's going on anyway. She just comes in every now and then and finds a stack of paper about this high with the tractor feed, if, of course, the tractor feed didn't bunch up and everything sort of killed you then. And I got my porn fix. And I didn't need to hide that one because they didn't even know what it was. So for me personally, I'm a geek, I'm a tech geek, I'm a gadget freak. I'm also into DIY, all this type of stuff. And my own interest is usually enough to get me to a certain point with any type of technology. But there's some things that I never would have thought of doing if it weren't for the fact that I wanted to get access to some porn. Now, moving on a little bit later, we get to the time of news groups. When I finally got my first internet access, it was email and Usenet was the most interesting thing. Usenet was a whole new world of learning. I had to learn so many different things that I had no other reason to use before. I had to suddenly learn about spam. I didn't have any spam in my email box at the time. But there was starting to be spam in the news groups. I didn't have actually decent access to Usenet until fairly late, though. That was the biggest problem. I was on first class for a while. I was mostly bulletin boards for a long time. But anyway, that was when I really started to have to deal with that particular issue. I had to learn how to do things like decompress images. I had to learn how to do things. I mean, eventually that led to things like, well, now, just recently, how to do, what is it, PAR2 or something like that? There's another form that they've started developing, and it was hard to find something for the Macintosh that can do it. It was a pain in the butt. As a matter of fact, it was my desire to get better access to Usenet that made me just start looking into things like Linux. It was a terrible mistake, but it was fun, and they had the best Usenet newsreader that I'd been able to find. I also, because of that, started to learn about things like Bayesian filtering and how to actually, that's actually what cemented my love of things like smart folders now. It was a lovely thing. But that's just my story. And if you go back in time, there's a whole bunch of lovely things other than VHS, which I was actually never very fond of. And I've seen a couple of people make claims that are really rather astounding. For example, porn was one of the reasons that the English language was actually finally established as such in England. At the time, the primary language, especially of the courts, was French, and of course the church then was Latin. But there was a lovely little story that was hand-printed on manuscripts, passed from hand to hand, read aloud. It was Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. The problem is that you had to understand English. You had to understand the London vernacular of the time, actually, which was relatively new for a lot of people, especially those who maybe weren't from London and from members of the court from well outside who were really primarily versed in French. It's an interesting claim, not really very easy way of actually verifying it, but put yourself in the position of someone at the time. And you think it's bad when you have to figure out how to just get some basic online access or use a credit card to be able to purchase your monthly membership. In the case of, say, some close relatives, that was actually a very difficult process. But imagine you have to completely sit back and learn a new language. Porn might make it worth it. I know some people have tried to study. Well, they'd never studied German to be able to get access to porn. We saw the reason for that. Norwegian might be worth it. I don't know. Then the next thing you have is the claim that porn actually helped spread literacy. After Gutenberg's Bible, of course, some of the most popular things printed were pornographic works. Imagine you had to go out and learn how to read in order to be able to jack off. Or to have more fun jacking off. Huh? But it might just be the answer to the problem of America's adult literacy. The thing is that some of these printed works were actually illustrated manuscripts. So there were pictures, and the words just made it a little bit better, you know? And like I said, I think that's something that the Bush administration should seriously consider. Anyway, if we move it up a little bit to some other claims that have been made of various ways. Of course, photography, an interesting fact, well, supposed fact that I found or heard in a radio report about this particular issue was cowboys on the range were actually willing to pay considerably more for a photograph of a naked woman than they were to pay for a night in bed with the woman. Makes sense, actually. You get a lot more use out of it. I mean, you put it in your pocket, you can carry it around, you have it then when you're out in the range all by yourself, or maybe just, you know, looking at Joe next to you thinking, okay. But there's nothing to learn there. That's a fairly easy thing. You know, you get up, you spend the money, get the picture, look at it, put it in your pocket, and off you go. They had something to learn. And of course, they had the second best motivational tool, probably, that we know, at least in America at the time, and that would be money.
And the naked models.
And whatever goes on before and after. But they weren't the ones. They were still a relative minority. So you can't really say that the ones who were taking the pictures were helping spread the act of photography as a mass phenomena at the time. That didn't happen until, well, Polaroid. We got the swinger or the sexy 70, which, of course, was probably a nice thing. I don't know exactly what the numbers are. It's really hard to find any decent statistics on how many people were actually taking pornographic photos with their Polaroids. We can assume, though, that anybody who bought one did it at least once. And if it was a guy, you know what it was. His dick. At least based on girlfriends that I have that are online that get a lot of dick photos. But the real success has, of course, come with digital photography. You got to imagine that the extreme sales and success of things like Flickr has a lot to do with the fact that people are sharing naked photos of themselves. There's not a lot to learn in that either until you start trying to get creative with it. Or say you want to start posting to a news group. Now, for someone who's not a geek, posting to a news group is not as easy as it might sound, especially if you were an AOL user. And you can actually see the transition that a lot of people made. Even though Usenet has started to die out, there was a time right after AOL brought Usenet access to a mass of people. Roughly. I think it was 97. It was the endless September. It used to be that at the beginning of every school year, you'd get a bunch of newbies in who wouldn't know what the hell was going on. They'd create a bunch of havoc, be smartasses, have no clue of netiquette, not know what they're doing, ask stupid questions, just generally be annoying. But then they'd ease into it. And by around about December, things would smooth out and you'd get back to normal porn collecting. But when AOL come on, that all changed. It never stopped. They just kept coming and coming. And they didn't even know that it was, they had no idea. If you were checking out Usenet around 98, 99, 2000, you'd see these weird posts saying, cool website, dude.
That was 96.
That was 96? Okay. But it held on for a long time. The cool website thing might even still happen.
Yes.
I stopped reading now. I just suck the images down. I don't read any of the comments. But the interesting thing, now I have a relatively close relative who is a typical AOL user. They don't know what Windows are. They know that there's a computer and they know that there's the internet. And the internet is somewhere in the computer. And if they hit this button, they will get there. He learned enough to get to that point. And it was sort of interesting because they didn't know that there was like email, there was Usenet, there was the web, and then there was AOL. It was just all AOL, whatever. So you'd send them pictures, say, of kids they wanted to look at. And they'd look at them and then reply and say, nice pictures. And then about a week later, you'd get another mail saying, I don't know where the photos are. Where did I put the photos? And this went on with this guy for a long time. Until I went back and finally got him hooked up with a different computer. And he sat down and he I noticed for a little while I wasn't getting those funny mails back anymore saying it disappeared. And as I was setting up his new laptop and I was showing him how to actually get access to the hard drive on his main one so we could copy stuff over. There was one folder that was really important that he really wanted to copy over. I couldn't let his wife know that she said, can you help me copy this over? I was like, sure. So we copied it over, and he's like, you got to see this. This was a bonding moment. It was his porn collection. This man who did not understand what email was, who did not know what Usenet was, who couldn't tell the difference between the web and AOL, had managed somehow to download porn, save it, categorize it, structure his entire folder thing. It was amazing. It was amazing. I spent years trying to teach this guy how to do something, and he went off without me and figured it all out. It's the power of porn. It was astounding. And the other thing that I noticed in that time, not only had he learned how to finally deal with attachments and save things to his hard drive, but he knew what a virus program was. He knew why he needed it. He knew what a firewall was. He didn't really know what it did, but he did know that he needed that too. And he also knew that it was constantly going off all the fucking time, which is probably because he was so busy surfing the wrong porn sites. But that was seriously an eye-opening moment. I was just astounded at his ability to do this, especially since this was someone who would break out in hives at random moments because he felt guilty about being divorced. That is some power. That's motivation. Now, there's not a lot of people left here, unfortunately, because I wanted to ask some questions. I don't want to just talk about my personal experiences and the stuff. You bring them in here. Well, they're going to miss all the interesting stuff. Now I'm going to... Yeah, go get them. Because since nobody agreed to interview for me, well, a couple of people did. I have two. I'm going to have to ask all you to tell me your stories. The one thing I wanted to know specifically is, how do you identify yourselves? Who here identifies themselves as a geek? I'm just raise your hand if it fits, okay? There's no exclusion here. We can do the nerd thing next. Who identifies themselves as a nerd? You're lying. You're just trying to spare my ego. Let me finish now. So we got the nerds. We got the geeks. I missed the freaks. I couldn't see. Who identifies themselves as a freak? You identify yourselves as all three. Don't worry about it.
I'm a dork.
Jesus. Who identifies themselves as a dork?
You.
I wouldn't take that one. Porn consumer. Out yourselves, kiddies. Come on. It's a porn conference.
Yeah.
There should be more hands up than that. Porn fanatics. Fans. Readers. Listeners. Viewers of porn. I'm not going to get into defining porn. No. Look, the Supreme Court doesn't want to pull that one off. I'm not going to sit here and try to do that either. Community standards, okay? That's it. Oh, that's obscenity. I'm sorry. I have no idea what porn is, and I don't want to get there. I'm more into the softcore, personally, but whatever. Producers. Not necessarily commercial. You are a porn producer now.
I'm a producer.
As of yesterday, you are a porn producer. Okay, then let's put it this way. Who's a porn hobbyist? I'm not using the word amateur because that gets a whole... Hobbyist. No, I'm not asking who... well, that counts too, actually. Yeah. That's true. That's your job. Okay, then professional. Well, the whole idea was basically that, you know, when you're dealing with the establishment or the success of a new medium, and saying, well, porn is actually pulling this off. This gets actually back to what Tina Lawrence was saying and one of the commenters in the audience. It is sort of strange that there's not more technology in the movies. On the other hand, yes, it's true. It will most likely reflect exactly how mainstream the technology has become. But on the other hand, porn is helping make this technology mainstream as it goes. Because just early adopters doesn't answer the question of why these things are becoming popular. Yeah, well, I think that might also be like a budget issue. Not to mention the fact that I would not be surprised if there, what's Bühnenausstatter? If their set department and set design were a bunch of talentless hacks who didn't have access to a whole lot of anything to throw on the set. That's just a theory. Well, yeah, but to be fair, the office was in a garage. That's what they were doing on screen. Yeah. I'm too European to live in America, and I'm not American. I'm too American to actually live successfully in Europe. So I'm.
Where do you live?
Vienna.
Where?
Vienna.
Oh, okay.
That's in Austria. That's in Europe. That's on the other side of the ocean. Not this one or that one. Where is it? It's on the other side.
I rode a bicycle.
I was going to be really impressed for a minute there. This is actually not the personal stories I want. It's. The one nearest to the train station, or the one, okay, Beata Uzer, yeah. Now, I have a couple of people that were willing to tell me some stories. One of them is actually a developer now of adult, and it's sort of sweet. It's, you know, his motivation is not maybe, a lot of people who maybe aren't too familiar with the industry think, oh, all those porn producers are just a bunch of greedy, slimy bastards who, like, have bad haircuts, wear ponytails, Hawaiian shirts, and don't generally have a lot of taste, and like women with silicone. But there are some people out there developing stuff that don't necessarily fit into that, and I need power soon. Now, I had the problem. I mentioned I had a problem finding people. Fortunately, I'm on the mailing list of Regina Lynn's mailing list, and I sent out a desperate cry for help, and a couple of people responded, and yeah, exactly. You tried to hook me up with him, but it was nice. I appreciate it. A couple actually offered, though, to talk to me. I told you about, forget it. This is gossip now, it's not. One of them is in Hong Kong, so I couldn't actually like talk to him physically, but hey, that's the marvels of modern technology. One more thing I had to learn, I was going to go out and learn how to record a Skype call, or actually I was just going to pay for the program to do it, it's not that difficult. But in order to present this to you, I was lucky enough, neither one of us had time to actually hook up at the same time online, so he recorded a short story as to why he got into developing toys for adults.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Buford. David asked me to record an interview for his presentation talking about how I got into making adult toys. So the short story is that I started out making children's toys. And I'm a inventor, product developer, making stuff out of plastic and electronics. So that's my background. So a couple of years ago, well, it's been that long, when I was playing with my girlfriend with this, which is the old technology, She really didn't care for it because it was a little too strong, and there wasn't really anything in between. It didn't really work the way that she wanted it to, and I think that's a common thing in general about adult toys, that everybody kind of finds that, you know, sure they might be fun, but at the same time there's something kind of missing from them. So that got me thinking, you know, how can I possibly improve on that? So that brings us to the first version of the Happy Kitty. Now, how we got to there was about 6 months or so of going back and forth with syringes and latex and water and fishing line and all sorts of things. And there's a couple of different prototypes. At one point, this is the pump, the prototype pump for one of them. But really, for me, it was no different than developing a children's toy as far as the process. But definitely, there's a lot more emotional attachment and things like that. And definitely, as far as when I took it into a real product and started producing it, there's definitely a much, much more emotional expectation of it, where, you know, you're really connecting with other people much more so than with something like this. Well, yeah, that's only proper, I guess. But, so what is it that I find interesting about it? Well, it's definitely something that's, you know, personally pleasurable for me to invent something like that. And not just in a gratifying way as far as, you know, the same kind of way that I enjoy making other products. You know, it's definitely, you know, a turn on, and to know that other people are using that and enjoying it in that way. And I do plan on making more. I think that there's a lot of room in that field where the technology just really hasn't been exploited at all. I think there's a lot more materials. I think there's a lot more new processes to look at. And if you compare it to children's toys, there's barely any technology in it now. This is really no different than what was out there 100 years ago. So that's my spiel. I hope that's enough.
And of course, he's a little bit wrong there. About 125 years ago, it would have been steam-powered, but I believe the first one took an entire room. Now, his motivation, of course, wasn't just to be able to get access to cheap, free, or otherwise available porn. There we had some more noble motivation going on. Love. The desire for better sex with his girlfriend. But every time one of these new technologies go through, you have to remember, and it always gets a little bit too abstract for me at times, that there are thousands of people out there going through a personal learning process. And for most of them, who aren't geeks, dorks, freaks, nerds, and so on and so forth, it's actually a very, very difficult experience. Now, Regina Lynn, someone you might have heard of, she's helped me out now as well. And she also doesn't actually... Well, we have two stories from Regina. We have one as to actually why she ended up being what she is now, how she got into her job, which was, well, I'll let her explain it. It's easier.
What's funny is I can only remember seeing porn once in college. We rented a tape and had a whole bunch of people over at somebody's house and went over and watched it. And it kind of just didn't, I mean, I found it really boring. And so after that, I was married, and I was having a lot of problems with sex because I had been molested as a child, blah, 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 like everybody else, and had a lot of fears. And anytime you got a naked man near me, I really admired and loved the beauty of it, but kind of shut down and was scared and couldn't deal, couldn't touch. Did I say I was married? So this was really hard. And there was therapy, and there was working on this, and there was books about that, and so on. And we tried looking at porn and seeing if that would turn me on. And we kept looking at this sort of soft, you know, women, for women and couples and so on. And it was just not doing anything. So we got DSL here in San Francisco in about 1996 or whenever it was first available. We were one of the first on the list. So we go out. I start looking at porn online and discovered what I needed was triple penetration, hardcore, and a lot of gay male porn. Even so, pretty quickly that got boring, and my then husband mentioned something about chat rooms and how the interaction was fun. So he was away for the weekend at a comic book convention, and I decided I would try out the chat room he had told me about that he had been in. And I went in there, and at around 4 in the morning, I think I went in about 3 in the afternoon, at 4 in the morning, I went to bed after my very first cyber sex experience and realized that my entire life was about to change. And through probably after the first year of playing in that chat room a lot, all of the problems I'd had with sex were gone. And now the problem was keeping up with me, because I had about 10 years to make up at this point. I must have been 26, 27, I can't remember, late 20s. And so my entire life changed, and I eventually made it a career.
So, from the desire to be able to deal with...
I guess I would say...
Okay. Problems in a relationship, in our own sexuality, to discovering all of a sudden exactly what types of porn she liked, to discovering the joys of cyber sex and online chatting. Eventually, though, there are a couple of other things that she was forced to learn or thought that she might be forced to learn or confronted with thanks to porn.
The most recent porn inspiration for learning technology would be encryption, when I went through a lot of time and effort to learn about not just encrypting my email, but encrypting all of my incriminating stuff, of which I have a lot. I use the same laptop for my day job, which is freelance technical writing, and for my column and features and all the other books and things. And I was trying to protect it from my mainstream clients, that I had all the sex stuff on my computer. The conclusion I came to was that it was too much effort and too hard for the time that I have and where I want to place my energy. And I just decided if I get caught or if something bad happens that smacks me in the ass about it, I'll deal with it then.
So, those are two examples of what I hope to have much more of. And now I was hoping to have some people in the audience, some more people, who'd be willing to actually share their stories of personal development through porn or sex. No money. Money is the wrong incentive. We're not dealing with that one here. Kyle,
okay.
You want to share?
Okay, so we have open mic now.
Gather around, kids. Let me tell you a story. God, this feels like an AA meeting now.
Wait, I'll help you out. Hello, my name is David Dempsey, and I'm a pornoholic.
So anyways, up until last year, actually, I lived in Oklahoma. Sunny, wonderful, right? Well, it's Oklahoma, and if you don't know what Oklahoma is, good for you. And I lived actually near a fairly populated town, but still out in the country. But I had the wonderful world of BBSs and, well, Delphi and Genie and everyone that remembers, like, the late 80s, early 90s online scene, accessible through my 2400 baud modem. So if you ever wonder what it would be like to form the psyche of someone through early Usenet and FidoNet, hi. I mean, I remember my parents getting really, really pissed off, like, when I decided to try and run a Gecko relay once and not really understanding the fun of long distance. It's funny how it changed my point of view about porn and sex and everything else, because the people on the internet at the time, I mean, we were getting all this stuff from the Well and from the Bay Area and from all of these progressive places, be they cities in the U.S. or other countries or whatever else, because, I mean, getting on the net then was fucking hard. So you had a lot of intellectual knowledge going into it, and people were at the forefront of sex back then, too, and there was all sorts of crazy stuff happening. I mean, we still, like I said in my earlier presentation, we still have not properly mimicked things in graphical virtual worlds that people were doing in text worlds back in the late 80s. So it's been, and that's really what sort of formed my progressive views on sex, I think, was the fact that I saw it from the beginning, and that was, I mean, I got the usual education and stuff too, so I wasn't trying to like stick it in someone's ear in a new way or something, because I learned it off the internet. But it was an interesting way to sort of learn about the social, like the new social norms, or what other people thought, or what other people were doing, or what you can't learn on TV and from whatever your gym teacher tells you in high school. So, and now I'm standing in a dungeon talking about it at a porn conference for the second time today. So I definitely think that it completely changed the way I think. I mean, some of it I'm only now figuring out, but and it was an interesting way to sort of see society through a computer screen and learn things the way I did. So
I have a very brief anecdote.
Basically, I grew up in rural Tennessee, and I would not be the person I am today if not for two things, Rolling Stone magazine and pre-Video Cypher 2 satellite dishes.
I had similar experiences to Kyle on technology. I remember the first Perl users group meeting I went to, Perl Mongers group, and it was amazing because there were these actual physical people. This is in Colorado, Nate Torkington's group up in Fort Collins. There are these physical people who were talking about things I actually knew. And until that moment, I knew that these things existed because, like, these characters on the screen told me so, but they weren't real people. It was bizarre. No, so not.
I mean, it's really interesting because it's like it's not only a personal history. It's like we should like really like have a big project about that, like doing like telling the oral history of all those stories, because that's oral history. That's how like the last like we are talking about like the 25th digital revolution right now. Like they're like the time spans of this like digital like. Generations are getting like smaller and smaller and smaller, and I think we should like really like tell most of the stories from the 80s and 90s, but because they will soon be lost. I mean, Jonathan Coopersmith, like you said it in your talk that if keep your records and remember your stories. I mean, my personal story I can add is that I remember, and that's maybe embarrassing, but I think I masturbated. I think in the early like 1989 or 1990, Leisure Suit Larry. I mean, you know Leisure Suit Larry? Yeah. Leisure Suit Larry is like an adventure game. It's basically an ironic adventure game about this like leisure suit wearing like, what is he, like Playboy? I don't know. Loser Playboy, I don't know. But there was one like part of the game. And it took me a lot of effort into like coming to that part where there was like really like low resolution 320 times 200 picture of a female body. Actually not a total female body, it was just like the breasts and the face, nothing else. And I remember it was enormously exciting getting to the point of being able to see that picture. And it was, of course, like highly fetishized because like I was like pumping so much effort in getting to that picture because I knew, because people told me there is this like this nude picture, and like I was completely like it was strange. It was really, really strange. That's actually the only like really drastic moment I can imagine, like except the thing that you already told, that I found the VHS cassettes of my parents or my father. So, and I saw like a porn VHS tape when I was like 6 years old or something like that. And I remember that I didn't understand it. I saw it and I didn't know what it is, and I put it back in the like in the cupboard, yeah. And then a couple of years later, like when I was 9 or 10, I rediscovered it and I saw it, and I said, now I know what it is. So I suddenly realized what I had seen like 4 years before but didn't like get it. So I think that's my anecdotes.
That's okay, it's late and I'm almost done. I just wanted to use those stories basically to illustrate one particular fact. When I was working with web development companies towards the end of the 90s, the biggest problem out there was, of course, the end user. We were always limited in what we were able to do because you had to cater to the end user. You had to cater to the smallest common denominator, and it was a bitch because they always were assumed to have the worst equipment. They were always assumed to have the worst software. They were always assumed to have the worst connection. But thanks to porn, that all changed. And it was their desire to learn these things, to expand their abilities, and to be able to get access to better porn, that now it's so much easier to get online fast. And we're no longer just text-based. And the blinking GIF thing has died out. Indeed. And the reason is because they were willing to make sacrifices and invest money in order to be able to get access to the things that the porn producers, to a large degree, were willing to do because they were much more likely at the time to push the envelope. So, if there are any producers still here, the one thing I'd have to say to you is, to quote a very bad film that annoys me, and I still have to cry out occasionally, build it and they will come.